reindeer in the nerd's domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Nerd's Domain podcast. This week and next, we're going to be doing our favorites of everything. So we're going to talk about our favorites of our normal review subjects. We're going to split movies and TV into two separate subjects, and that'll be this week and next week. So stay tuned for the second half next week. But this week, let's start with books, and we'll start with by introducing people. I'm here with Johnny.
Hello.
Scott.
Hi there.
Jesse.
Howdy.
And Shirley.
Hello.
All right, let's start with books. John, do you want to go first?
Sure. Now, is this our series allowed, or do I have to
narrow it down? Yeah, series is fine.
Okay, well then.
Best of all time.
Best of all time.
To Johnny, yes.
Yeah, to me, Wheel of Time. I've been reading it since I was a sophomore in high school, and I got.
Is that how long it takes to read it?
Okay, sorry. No, it was funny. No, honestly, yeah, because I was a sophomore in high school in 97, 98. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 98, when I was a sophomore in high school and discovered the series. It was started in 91 and wrapped up last year, two years ago, because it's almost Christmas again, yeah. But 14 books in the series. Unfortunately, Robert Jordan passed away.
Another 15. New Spring?
Oh, right. New Spring. I haven't read that one yet. I need to borrow it from somebody or, you know, get my cheap butt outside and buy it in a bookstore or something. So anyway, it's a great tale of fantasy in the Tolkien tradition. But it creates a great world where... things are a little less complicated than what Tolkien describes. A little less dry, I guess.
Oh, okay. Sure. I don't think they're less complicated. I think there's more politics. More complicated.
Oh, there's politics. More politics, yeah. Names are easier, though.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I'll give it that. Character-based math, that's always a good thing.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're, like, I'm trying to remember the name of the captain. I can't. The boys, two of the characters meet a captain of a river ship in the first book, and he is there, and he's just there for one section. You think, okay, that was an interesting little bit, and then he's gone, and then he comes back in like four books later, and then he's gone again. You're like, okay, that's clearly the end of him. No, he's in the final book all the way up to the very end. And like, you don't expect it, because you're sure he's dead times over.
There's a lot of characters, I find, because I'm reading this.
Yeah.
I would like to finish it eventually. I'm reading this, but I find a lot of characters and a lot of stuff that he touches on once, moves on, and then comes back and touches on again. And if you didn't pay attention the first time, you might be a little lost.
Yeah.
Which I like that.
And it also blew my mind. I was done with the series. Completely, you know, I thought I had digested it all and gotten everything I was going to out of it, and I was just going to wait a few more years and then start it up again just to relive the experience. And then I was listening to a podcast, and somebody made an offhand comment that Robert Jordan was also a great lover of mythology, and the character of Matrim Coffin, his storyline parallels the legend of Odin of the Norse mythology. And I had my mind blown because I hadn't picked up on that. And actually, each of the three covers a different mythological character. The three main characters covers a different mythological character. And I just, like I said, I had my mind blown by that. And now there's a whole other layer that I want to get back into the series and start over.
So are we also going to do single, standalone, one book?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, no, I mean, are we going to do series and books?
No.
Oh, well, that's
not. So, who's your favorite character in the series?
I can't really choose of the three, because what I found as I read is he'll leave one character out. You'll see, so there's Rand, Matt, and Perrin. Matrim Coffin is Matt. You'll see Rand and Matt for a lot of the book, and Perrin will be nowhere to be seen. And right about the time I'm sitting there thinking, I wonder what is going on in Perrin's life, in air quotes, because I know the characters are not people. but I wonder what's going on with Perrin. And that's when he gives you a little glimpse, and then you're back to Matt and Rand. And you're like, oh no, I want to know more about that other thing. And then you finish the book, and you gotta go on to the next book. And then Perrin comes into the story again. It's just, he does a great job of stringing you along, and yeah. I want to know.
And Perrin is left out of like all of book five?
And Matt is left out of two entire books back to back.
Yeah, so I mean, he definitely switches in and out in a very effective way, I think.
I won't say anything other than the author drops a building on Matt, and then he's not seen for two books. And you're like, I want to know what happened.
Well, Lan becomes unbound, and then you don't see him for two books?
I don't remember.
And he may be what you would consider a secondary character, but in this book, there are so many secondary characters. Yeah. Like, there are the three kids he just talked about, and then there's like 40 secondary characters. I mean, there's all of them. And then there's these tertiary characters like the riverboat captain,
right,
who just come back all the time. Yeah. It's a really good series, even though Jesse hates it.
I didn't say I hate it. I just got bored with it.
First book is a little slow. It really is.
I mean, it's about the fifth.
Fifth book is also a little slow.
Yeah, me too.
Was Rand locked in the box by the
spoilers?
I don't remember, but Pippin, I think his name was, or the blacksmith.
Perrin
had just done his big thing and went back home.
You can't say done his big thing.
Yeah, because that's not
he's got thing. Like eight big things.
There were knots that tied. There were tied.
Okay.
And I felt that was a good stopping point, and he was my favorite character in the story. Yeah. So I was just done with it.
It gets better.
It probably does.
I really like Perrin. Really, really like Perrin.
Yeah.
He's a very simple, straightforward character in a very complicated world.
So in this book, no one knows how to make magic items. Perrin figures it out.
Oh, really?
No spoilers here.
No spoilers.
All right. Now, Scott, why don't we go to you for your favorite book or book series?
My favorite book.
Well, I liked this movie, so Gone with the Wind.
My favorite book, and I have a really hard time because there's three, but my favorite book has got to be The Matteries Circle by Robert Ludlum. And I almost said The Bourne Identity, because The Bourne Identity is just an amazing book to read.
Oh, I want to read that so bad I can taste it.
Oh, it's amazing. The Matteries Circle is about Brandon Schofield is this U.S. spy agent. And we're talking like Cold War spies. Not like James Bond flitting around. I mean, we're talking like we're doing surveillance and counter-surveillance and measures and countermeasures.
The quote-unquote real spy as opposed to James Bond.
Right.
Fantasy spy.
Correct. And he is the ultimate on the American side. And his counterpart in the former KGB spy, Brandon Schofield he's not blacklisted, but it's of that variety. He's got to go. And his counterpart is also blacklisted. And they do a like, uh-oh, and there's this pair up. They hate each other. They've been enemies for decades. But who set us up? Who did the... And it's this spy thriller that is absolutely amazing. In almost every Ludlum out there, there will always be several key elements that are brought together. Fire is almost always used as a distraction. That's why even in the Bourne movie, when he shoots the thing and the propane tank explodes, and there's fire, and everybody goes, ah! And runs over to it to put it out so that he can sneak by the thing. They do something very, very similar in, not to the shoot the propane tank, but fire is always used as a distraction. Because it is a very primal, it is very like, you know, somebody, fire! Uh-oh, okay, we've got, in the back of our lizard brain, we've got an issue. There's always a car chase in the rain, where you're going, well, it had been raining, and it was really slick out there, and we're doing 95 miles an hour, and you're going, oh, this can't end well. There's always one of those, and they're very interesting because they're different each time. And Ludlum is a consummate researcher, to the point that he will visit the locations he is writing about, as in, they came off of that terrace, jumped to the small convenience store next to it, kicked in the thing, ran down the street, and literally lost a guy in an alley and stepped out on the street and said, well, in Pittsburgh. And he said, well, that was on the corner and across the street was the thing and the courthouse was right there. And he just tucked his hands in his pockets and walked across the street. And as he's explaining all the detail, it hit me. Oh my God, I've been on that street corner. I know where he's talking about. And it's such the level of detail that you are immersed. And he does it with every city and locale that they visit. Like, he will go say, oh, well, you know, there's this hotel off the main strip that's like two blocks over here and one block up that he found and visited. And he'll describe, oh, well, the bakery was right across the street. And then there was that little noodle place right next to it. And you're going, I know what you're talking about. It's just an amazing. I mean, and when that gestalt comes together, and if you like spy flicks, or if you like action adventure, or if you like cliffhanging, like, turn the page, turn the page, turn the page. Mattery Circle is one of the absolute best.
And this book is all by itself, or is it part of a series?
There's a Mattery Circle 2, which, not as good in my opinion, but it sort of picks up. There's this character in it called the Shepherd's Son, and we find out about the Shepherd in the second one. But tangentially, they don't all exist in the same universe, but there's sort of this broken, stacked, like, when these events happened in this book over here, you know that 2 months later or, you know, 6 months or a year after that, something tangentially is mentioned over here. So they might all be in the same universe. It's very, they're all spy genre type thing. Anything Ludlum writes is magnificent. You should read it. Okay. With the exception of like the Jason Bournes, you know, Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy, you know, those are all the same character.
Right, right.
But they're like the brownstones in Georgetown that are visited by the secret agency that's hunting Jason Bourne are present in other books, although not folks from the same group. Like, they'll mention, you know, people go, well, we met at the mall, like, in Washington, between the Washington Monument and the president. Like, yeah, that exists, but there are more detailed locale of special behind the black ops stuff that are mentioned that don't always, one doesn't feed, and you can't go, oh, yeah, well, that's the time when this happened. But they're close enough that you get really, it becomes its own sort of universe without being, oh, yeah, they mentioned that town, but they never visited, and now I get the story of that town. I mean, it's not that sort of, you know, Greyhawk-ish, oh, I can fill in this part of the map because we finally had that, you know, that book.
So it's kind of the way that SVU is attached to Homicide on the Streets.
Yeah, ish. Ish. Or that SVU is attached to Law and Order.
Or occasionally they're like, oh, we're going to bring over Lenny Briscoe just because we can.
And that happens like once or twice. It's not a big thing, no, but it's like Criminal Intent and SVU.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, yeah.
Cross, it's just, you know, they're both in New York.
Right. And they're both, and you've got that like, oh, and you know that, you know, Jack McCoy's over here doing his thing. And you don't ever see him, but you know, like, we watched the original and this was totally cool. It's that sort of thing.
Right on. Okay.
And if you like Cold War spies, we all do. Because I don't mean to be this way with the whole terrorist thing in the Middle East and all of that. I really wish we could go back to just, you know, look, boys and girls, Russia on the map. See that big red area? That's the enemy. Yeah. We know where they are. They're the bad guys. Gosh, I sleep well at night. I mean,
it was a simpler time.
It was a simpler time. And I kind of want to go back then when we know who the bad guy is. Like, you know, Da Zvidaniya, comrade. The Reds, they're the bad guys. Yeah. There you have it.
Okay. That's funny that you mentioned that because I don't know what started the thought process, but like the past 7 days, like literally the past 7 days, I think I've thought that like 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People like, my parents, we were talking about it too, and they're like, yeah, remember the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War thing? Man, tensions were high. We were all afraid.
Yeah.
And it was, and then people were going to bomb shelters, and then that stopped, and the boats turned around, and then they were like, yeah, but, you know, we sort of wish we could go back to something like that.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what? But, yeah, simpler times. We knew who the Russians were the enemy. And there you go. It wasn't, well, could be anybody coming across your border, and anyone with a plane might just, wait, whoa, that's frightening. Let's go back to Russians.
Let's go back to Russians. Let's go back to Hitler.
Go ahead, Jesse.
All right.
Whoa. Well,
this...
Whoa.
Go ahead, this book, I have loved it, I have hated it, but it is probably the best one I've ever read. It's The Cat Who Walks Through Walls.
Yes!
By Heinlein.
Sorry. Yeah, I apologize. I just blew that out. Yeah. Absolutely.
Have you read it?
That was one of my top three.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh, it left me in a bad place. The whole start of it is this kind of gritty noir space detective story. And I love noir detective stories.
Oh, yeah.
And then halfway through, he gets caught up in something much, much grander. Mm-hmm. And it's Heinlein's take on the fact of authors just kind of leaving loose ends. He meets up with the secondary characters of almost every Heinlein book ever made.
There's a cross. And it's amazing.
It is.
And because if you have a favorite Heinlein, this guy's going to run into him. And you're just like,
absolutely. And I was at work on break when I was reading the last chapter of it. And the only way I could describe this to anybody who has not read a Heinlein book would be to, if he was reading something like the Harry Potter series and the last fight with Voldemort's going great. No, everything's fine. And then like the last five pages, half the people just die. And they literally state what creator would do this to something. And that's like the last line of the book is who would possibly do this to their characters? Who could possibly do this? Nice. And I regret it now, but I threw the book away. And
because it evokes that much of an emotional response.
It physically hurt me. It's the first time I think I've ever cried in public, including funerals.
Yeah. Because everybody's like, oh, Game of Thrones, J.R.R. Martin, he's the guy that just would kill off your favorite character. Yeah. He's the first person that's ever done that. Wrong.
Yeah. These guys had won. It was over. It was almost like it was in the epilogue that it happened.
Yeah. And Heinlein is my favorite sci-fi author.
Yeah. Have you read the one that comes after this? Because I kind of refuse to read it because I want it to end there.
No.
Is it still?
Pick it up.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, anything a Heinlein reads, pick it up, read the first sentence.
Yeah.
Close the book. Set it down. If you don't go, wait, but I have questions now. Then maybe Heinlein's not for you. He has some of the best first sentences of books of any author I've ever read.
Absolutely. I've never read a book of his I haven't liked.
Yeah.
Except kind of that one at times.
And it's because it's such a visceral response.
It really is. And any book that can get that kind of emotion is a good book.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Shirley, go ahead.
I have a few.
The third one
would be the Interview with a Vampire series by Anne Rice. Second one would probably be Mists of Avalon, and first one, which I just forgot. Anyway, so
that first one's really good, though.
Yeah. what the heck was I thinking about?
About the vampire one? Besides the fact it's a well written story.
Well, the whole series of books are well written stories. You get such in depth. Like the imagery you're talking about from Robert Ludlum, she's just amazing with the imagery. You feel like you're in New Orleans. You feel like, you know, you're on the island that Lestat gets taken to. The depth of emotion that they talk about when the characters are in the scenes, you know, you feel like you're there and you feel those emotions. As far as Mists of Avalon and that series goes, I love the fantasy aspect to it, and I love that take on the Legend of Camelot.
Yeah, King Arthur is another one of my favorites. And so the
get Johnny a little drunk, you'll talk about it for hours. I will.
But it's Mists of Avalon is sort of a feminist viewpoint of the whole story, depending on which translations or which editions you read, the stories of Arthur can be very frivolous or very deep, but the Mists of Avalon take it in another viewpoint, and it's tragic because, you know, Morgaine knew she had to do what she had to do, and, you know, certain people were going to view that as evil, but if she didn't do it, things wouldn't happen. So it was...
And I feel like, for me, that kind of opened up my viewpoints a little bit on religion as and how I felt in my heart and what I felt while I was growing up, because it allowed me to be like, oh, hey, you know, there is this different viewpoint on, and it's literally what side of the line you're on. You know, are you on the side that believes in a patriarchal God, or are you on the side that believes in something else? And of course, they were talking about the goddess, but it kind of opened up like, oh, there can be this like universal consciousness, and it doesn't have to be like, I don't have to be some certain thing. And I still can't remember the first book.
Sorry.
Yeah, so sorry. I'll interrupt you later.
That's cool. You always do. I'm really tempted to say that the, wow.
See?
You should have written it down.
Got it. Okay, I got it now.
I wrote mine down.
The wearing the cape series by the author who we really appreciate, Marion Harmon. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I want to say his is, but honestly, I want to see where it goes. I think it'll grow into being my favorite, but it's not quite there yet. There's not enough story there. I'm not going to say it's the deepest story, but it's a very fun take on a world of superheroes that I haven't seen before. Plus, getting to talk to the author and actually having him like comment on our website and being friendly, that kind of stuff, just makes the book feel a little more personal to me. So I'm going to set that aside, though, and I'm going to go with Giver, which is just, it is written for The Giver. It's written for a younger audience. You're looking all confused, John.
Is that the movie coming out?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to know about that movie. I read a review about it that just told me it was terrible.
Okay.
The Giver is set in this post-apocalyptic world where everyone is taking pills to kill their emotions and their memories. So they don't remember the history of the world. They don't know anything about it. They don't feel pain. They don't feel jealousy.
Is that the one where they don't see color?
They don't see color. They don't have their, like, when you turn 13, you are assigned a job. So there are birthers. There are women who just birth children. That's all they do.
What?
Yeah.
That's creepy.
And so everybody's assigned a job, and so the main character isn't given a job there until the end. And he should have been, like, they go by exact birth date, so he should have been, like, 8th, and instead he was, like, the 15th kid. So they give him the job of receiver. He becomes the receiver of memories, the receiver of emotions, the receiver of color. And to do that, he has to spend time with the Giver, who was the previous receiver of the town, but he's becoming too old and has to retire. So he knows all of the pain and all of the emotion and all of the memory and the history that this town has gone through. And he's kind of like a town elder that no one really talks to unless they really need some help with something. And so this 13-year-old kid goes through this emotional experience of gaining everyone's emotions, including his family's. Like the girl that he's close to but not in love with because they don't feel that. Like, on and on and on, and eventually he goes, you know what, this is crazy. What happens if I leave? And the Giver's like, whoa, can't leave. If you leave, all of those emotions will go back, and it'll cause chaos. But I'll help you leave. So he helps the kid run with this baby that he found. And the last scene is literally, they go to the top of a hill that's covered in snow, which he's never seen before. He's experienced the memories of it, but he's never seen it. Gets on a sled, not sure where the sled comes from.
Rosebud.
It's not Rosebud. He gets on the sled, holds the kid, and goes down the hill. And that's the end of it. And, like, they're out of food. They're clearly going to die, but he has left. He has liberated himself.
It's emotional.
It is. I cried at the end of that book. The movie, instead of leaving it ambiguous as to what happens, answers that question, which you should never do.
Which is horrible. Yeah.
You should leave it ambiguous. I don't care what the answer is, it's the wrong answer. Because for someone, it's the wrong answer.
Right.
So,
well, and that's The Lady and the Tiger. Well, and then they're like, and then she motioned to the left. There's the end of the story. Which one was it, The Lady and the Tiger? Well, the movie, he opens it and this is what's behind it. That's dumb. It's supposed to be, wait, what happens here?
Yeah.
Well, that's the point of conversation.
I did find out that there are sequels to The Giver.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this. I think the book stands on its own.
It does.
It's written by Lois Lowry. Mm-hmm. Won a writing award. I'm not sure which one it is.
I can't remember.
But it's a really, really solid book, and it's written for kids. It's written for, I'm sorry, young adults. So it's super simple to get through, but it sets up this world, this post-apocalyptic world that just doesn't make sense as you start to learn about it. Because it's not like we all live in a world. Like, Lois doesn't explain this to you as you're reading it. You slowly learn. Like, we don't have emotions. We don't see color. And that one blew my mind. I'm like, I've just been envisioning everyone seeing color, and now they don't, and I have to stop.
Right, and that was one of the kickers, because they've got this scene where the kid stops in his tracks because he can see this rose. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, it's a rose, but it's this vibrant red against a background of black and white.
Yeah,
and you're like, wait, what? And he goes back to the giver, and he's like, oh, what's going on? There's something wrong here. And he goes, oh, that's color. You're seeing that for the first time, aren't you? It's a little bit of a shock. I understand
and
that.
And he's like, what's color? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And so they have to go through all of these, like...
And you continue to revise, like, oh, so nobody sees color? Like, hold on, I got to revise the way... And they build this society in those layers of, as he experiences or discovers something new that we take for granted, we realize the rest of the town doesn't have that. And you're going, like... I don't want to live here.
Like this, yeah, you're like, this is a perfect society. What do you mean they don't have emotions? This is the perfect society. What do you mean they don't have color? They've never sledded. They don't get snow. This place sucks.
Yeah, and by the end of the movie, you're just like, and run!
And at the end of the book, like, he's leaving, and you're like, go, go, yeah. Like, you know he's going to die of exposure or hunger or something. And you're like, go, do it, go. It's a really, really good book. It's such a simple book, too, that you can read it real quick.
So I'm just curious, because the concept of not seeing color is, I'm having trouble, like, with that idea.
As an artist,
yeah.
Have you seen Pleasantville? Welcome to Pleasantville.
Yeah, but yeah. Pleasantville is different because they go from color to black and white back to color.
Yeah.
So had they opened with black and white, it might have been
more
impactful, but right. that's a whole thing. So you said post-apocalyptic, though. Yeah. So is it post-apocalyptic in that the world has been reduced to small, isolated towns with technology?
No, it's more dystopic than post-apocalyptic, because it's not well, you know, the war, it changed all that. No, there's no mention of it.
Okay, so technology...
We now have this perfect society because there were these events.
But you're not digging in the dirt, and there's not wild animals that you have to watch out for and all that stuff. So
I guess it's enclosed. Yeah, and as you just learned about this one town. Yeah. And they never give a size to the town, but you get the feeling that there's only 15 kids his age. So that gives you about, you know, well, normally you'd say there's 15 breeding families, but there's not because... Right. They're all given to...
It's definitely smaller size, and they definitely, as they move forward, because they shock you with the emotion thing and then with the color thing, and they slowly begin to build this picture of, this is a closed system.
Yeah. Yeah. And he begins to revile his father. His father's a doctor. Well, if the baby isn't healthy, they kill it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he gets those emotions and that knowledge, and he's just like, don't touch me. And that's why he ends up taking the kid. The kid is a little sick. He's going to survive, but he may be deformed or something. There's something wrong with the kid. Yeah. He's not perfect. And he's like, no, you're not killing this one. I'm out.
Yeah, because not only do they have a job that's birther, but they have Spartan law, where if the child comes out sick or deformed in any way, they just kill it.
The math says this is not efficient anymore.
And you're like, wait, whoa.
I just had an issue with post-apocalyptic and how do they survive.
Oh yeah, no, that you're right. That,
so
it's
a dystopic future within a closed system. Totally intrigues me now.
That's fine. We'll go. We're going to switch over to podcasts.
Okay.
Let's start with Shirley. I know that you aren't the biggest listener of podcasts. We'll start with you, and that way you can just throw something out there, and we'll move on.
Which podcast do you always listen to? That's
not best podcast. The one your go to.
If you say Anger's Report, it's okay.
No. Yeah, you're right. I don't listen to very many podcasts, and I don't know why I don't. I should. But the thing is, my interests are so varied and wide. I never have a go-to podcast, or I can say a go-to podcast, because the one that I'm thinking of now, I would say, oh, it's my go-to, but I haven't listened to it in may very well be a year that I haven't listened to it, but it's Karen Tate's Sacred Woman, and I found her years ago, probably when podcasts first came out, but it's very much along the pagan spiritual path, and has a lot to do with looking into the history of women's mythology and things like that, so... that's the one that I go back to every now and again. But right now, I'm listening to Portal Side Chat, which has to do with Ingress. They're very, very helpful. It's an awesome podcast. They have a ton of tips. They have a lot of fun on the show. And I don't know. That's the one I'm stuck on now.
With Portal Side Chats, because I've listened to that, it is clearly fans of Ingress talking about Ingress. Yeah. It's not like Google came in and did this.
Yeah.
It's like... we really like this. We should do a podcast. And so they're really passionate about it. So that's positive.
Yeah, I only have one slight thing I don't like, but it's just the fact it's not long enough. I mean, it's like 15-minute bursts.
And I really wish it would just...
See, and I was thinking about suggesting in the Gaming with Scott, since I'm doing Ingress now, to do like the Indie Resistance channel or something along those lines.
Yeah, we definitely could do that.
Yeah.
And then talk to...
and meet up with groups and then, you know, live podcast them there and put it together and put it out.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Jesse, podcast.
The one I listen to as soon as it comes out anymore.
You say the Hearthstone podcast.
That is one of them, but it is not my favorite. My favorite would have to be Risk.
Okay.
I found it by pure fluke. It was one of his Risk.
Like the board game Risk?
Risk. Okay. But it's not about it. It's people telling stories about their life that are very emotional and something you typically wouldn't say in public, like risky stories of things that happen to you. It's typically done live, and it's mostly done by comedians, but still done in a very serious manner. It's very serious subjects, but they do about 3 or 4 different stories at a time. They're all very emotional. They range in topics, and I can honestly say I think I've liked every story on them.
So what is the... is it the point just to be, like, validated in what's going on in your life and to be heard? Or is it actually, like, there's other people there that provide feedback and say, we can help you with this?
There is absolutely no feedback whatsoever. It is one person telling a story. Like I said, sometimes it's live. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not. It's just recorded. But it's there. It's helping them get the story out. And then it's letting other people hear what's happening. And it's a glimpse into other people's lives. A lot of them are relatable, if not directly, at least in some manner.
Mm-hmm. Or is it the word, I guess, the category not safe for work? Like, do they
absolutely
edit? Yeah.
Not safe for work.
Because, This American Life does some really great, hard-hitting stories. But they obviously are not, they edit their...
it is completely unedited. Yeah. It can get downright vulgar at times.
Sure.
The host tells stories frequently, and he is an instructor at a kink camp.
Right.
And like I said, it's all range of stories.
Yeah.
They hold nothing back whatsoever.
The podcast Jay and Silent Bob Gold was started in a very similar, for a very similar purpose for one person. So
yeah,
if you are a fan of that part of Jay and Silent Bob, the hard stories that Jason Mewes can tell.
First 25 episodes
or
of that,
so, yeah.
Are really, really good. After that, it kind of becomes the same old thing, and then they switch gears a little bit, become a little more goofy.
Oh, dude.
Because he's gotten past that part of his life. Yeah. And, it's
but so. It is a very interesting look at drug addiction.
Yeah.
I will say, of all the things I never thought I would say about Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, that's a very in-depth, very scary, but very real look at drug addiction. It was fantastic.
So Risk keeps that going by going to people.
I highly suggest everybody over the age of 18 give it a shot.
Right.
It won't be everybody's cup of tea.
Sure.
It is a very interesting podcast.
You mentioned it once or twice before. Now I think I'm going to actually try it.
Scott.
I was going to say the Christopher Titus podcast, because he does an opening rant each one, the Armageddon Report. Pay up here! He's got a bunch of inside stuff, and I listen to it regularly. But when I need to clear space out, I would have said the BBC podcast because BBC World News, I've got a bunch of those on there. But if there's one that I
When I delete stuff off, everything basically goes, and the only podcast that I really, really keep is Manager Tools.
Fair.
And it's manager-tools.com, and they've got Manager Tools and Career Tools. And basically the idea is, okay, you want to be a manager, like a manager in a company, or you want to be a vice president or a senior VP or a CEO. You want to manage a group of people from a small department all the way up to an entire company. Here's what you need to know. Here's the things you need to do. You need to learn how to delegate. You need to learn how to, you know, delegate to the floor if you need to. You need to know how to do a one-on-one. You need to know what the Trinity is, how to give feedback, how to give employee reviews. And by listening to these things, there are things that if you've worked in a corporate environment before that your manager has done to you, and I say done to you because that's how it has happened in that viewpoint where you're like, man, my manager is such a jerk. I don't know why he treated me like that. That's just, she's horrible and he's horrible. I don't know why. That's so unfair. This is a bunch of bull. I hate that person. We've all had those things. Well, this is coaching for the other side that when you're a manager, you're going to need to do this or you're going to need to do that. And you're like, well, that's what that one jerk did to me. And you lean back and he goes, and here's why you need to do that. Here's how you handle corporate email. Here's how you handle, and they do things all the way down to, here's how you dress for an interview.
Here's how you shake a hand.
Here's how you shake a hand. Here, somebody offers your hand. This is the way you shake their hand. This is how you write a thank you note.
Here's how you introduce people.
Yeah.
Depending on their position, your position, and the position of the person you're introducing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really solid podcast. It's a lot.
It is.
I'll say that.
And if you listen to it from that standpoint, then you go, that's why my manager did that. This is why my manager shows up on a regular basis with more work for me to do when I don't have enough time to get the work done that they've assigned me last week. Why do you keep dumping stuff on my plate, you jerk? Like, can I get the stuff done you want that you keep asking me? So are these things done? No? Well, here's four more things for you. What are you doing? Like, why do you have to be just a jerk? There's reasons for, and it's encouraged that the idea is if you have people you manage, for the example of giving you more work after there's too much for you to do already. Well, new work means value. There are valuable things. Your company is growing. You're not stagnating, just doing the same thing every week. And new work forces you to look at the work you don't have, that you have, that you're not getting it all done. You're not finishing your work on Monday and going, well, I'm on my way to the car. Gosh, I hope I get some new work on Tuesday because I've got nothing to do. That never happens. There's always more stuff to do than you can fit in a day. So you're already making the decision, okay, I've got five things, I can only get four done today. You're already making the decision that fifth thing won't get done. You're already doing that, whether you know you're doing it or not. So when your manager comes with two more things, it forces you to look at the four things you are doing and go, are they more valuable than these two new things? If they're not, stop doing that and do one of these that's more valuable. It's those type of things that really give you a view into what your manager does and why they're a jerk. And why it makes sense. Yeah. It's a really good podcast.
John?
On a much lighter note, my choice for a favorite podcast is a gaming podcast that has been pretty regular. And I actually wrote a review for it on our site very early on. It's called Fandible. You've probably heard me mention it before in several Whatchadoings. But these guys are basically doing the podcast that I really, really would like to be doing. No, you know, I love masks and all the other things we do here at Nerds Domain. And when we manage to squeeze in, you know, 10 more minutes of my time, you know, a Fandible style podcast where they just play the game that they're interested in.
Look for those in June from Nerds Domain.
Or is that the
timetable?
Excellent. I hope I get to participate.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's just they always have fun. They bring up some really interesting games, and they do another thing recently called Geeky Round Topic, where they sit around and talk about a thing, usually gaming related. But that's my thing. I love to learn about new games and hear about new games, and I think they have some good thoughts and opinions.
Right.
That they expressed very well. Their early recordings were not great because they were recording in a New York City apartment with a train of some sort not too far away, and one of their hosts was not good about keeping his levels in the right spot.
That must be rough when people can't keep their levels in the
you
right
mean,
spot.
You mean from a loudness standpoint, Scott?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Didn't want to point fingers, but...
I'll point fingers myself.
We were all at least pointing eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody looked down to my end of the table as the mic is sitting on the other end of the table. Yeah.
But they've gotten better. They've moved. They've got new equipment. So, yeah, they're good stuff. You should go check them out.
Can I swing back for half a second and say it's not about... well, it makes... The manager tools makes you a better employee because you have an insight. It doesn't explain why your boss is a jerk. That's the other... That it makes you a better person if you listen to, here's the why behind why these things happen. I wanted to correct that because I thought I was giving a misinterpretation.
Sure. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say I remember my first book.
Go ahead. All right. What's your podcast, Matt?
Because I was getting ready to start. Go ahead.
No. It's The Ugly Duckling by Iris Johansson.
Okay.
So, all
right.
That's it.
Right on.
Okay, before you start.
go ahead.
So, Johnny.
Would you say gaming podcast? Are you talking like board games or RPGs?
Primarily RPGs.
Okay.
I mean, they'll talk, Jesus, the guy who had the level issue in the beginning, is into video games of all kinds. Two of the hosts, who are a married couple, were really into that superhero game that got turned off.
City of Heroes.
City of Heroes. They're really into that. They'll talk about that. So
that's been like 3 years ago.
Was it?
Yeah, it's not that recently. Well, but yeah, I'm with you.
For me, it's recent because that's how.
Recent.
Yeah. The three years out of the 31, it's pretty recent. But no, they'll talk briefly about those kinds of things. But it's primarily tabletop role playing games.
How old are you again?
You do realize that when you start measuring the percentage of your life that you've lived that you're old, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
So, let's do my podcast now. Is that okay, Jesse, Shirley?
I thought you were in video.
Scott? Yeah. No, I started with you.
He's been at the end of both lines. So,
my favorite podcast, and it really is a toss-up between two, and it's really unfortunate because both of them are great, but my favorite podcast is Film Sac. I love Film Sac. It's the only podcast.
SEC?
SACK. Film Sack.
Okay.
Like
a sack of film.
Yes.
No, Film Sack. So.
Zach isn't on that one.
No. Yeah, that's Frog Pants. No. That's
Zach on film.
That's Film Zack.
It quite literally is Zach on film. Film, or Zach Film, not Film Sack.
Okay.
Film Sack, where they watch movies typically on Netflix and talk about how terrible they were. So they watch things like Troll 2.
Yeah, so they sack them as in make fun of them.
The Alchemist, yeah.
I sent them Minority Report and they watched that.
That was a good movie.
Well, because one of the guys absolutely hates it and they said, if we get DVDs, we'll watch it. And I went, I'm going to go find them at the cheapest place possible. Got them for $1 each. I spent more in shipping than I did for the movies. But Film Sack is four guys, Scott Johnson, who's a cartoonist, and an illustrator. He does podcasts. Really funny guy.
Runs the Frog Pants Network.
Absolutely. Brian Dunaway, who's also a cartoonist and a podcaster. Really funny guy. What's his name? Randy Jordan, who looks like Jesus. Also a very funny guy. Looks like white Jesus. And works at Blizzard, which is why he left the Instance podcast, which was all about World of Warcraft. Now he works for Blizzard.
Nice.
And then the last guy is Brian Ibbett, who is a...
that's a powerhouse panel there.
Website designer and podcaster and music producer.
Yeah.
So these four guys, they're all hilarious. So they always open up with like their introduction talking about the movie, and they always close with their Twitter post, which is never 144 characters.
Yeah.
But those two things all by themselves, if they just did a podcast about that, they explained the movie and did the Twitter post and did nothing else, I would listen to that too. Because they're that good. But then they go through tropes, and they watched Wrath of Khan, which they just, if you watch it from that viewpoint of where are the tropes and what have they done here, there are some goofy things. You're like, still a fantastic movie.
Khan! Go ahead.
Always.
Yeah, but then they watched Search for Spock.
Oh, horrid movie.
Which we got to see that film sack live at Nerdtacular 2013.
You suck.
But it is, I think, by far the best podcast that Scott Johnson does easily.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's the best one that I have. My other one was Top 5. It's the other one that, like, literally as soon as it comes out, I hit download. I don't wait. I don't do anything else. I hit download. The Top 5 Express, I could get rid of those. But
they're only going to do Top 5 once every 2 weeks.
Well, that's fair.
Top 5
that's
Express
fair.
By Bruce Otter on the Major Spoilers Network is what it is.
Yeah.
His opinion of 5 things.
Yeah.
I can't believe I forgot about Top 5. Ever since I switched my iPhone, I've been trying to think of podcasts I used to listen to, and that was one of them.
Top 5 is good. Should I just hand you my phone? Yeah, now, the fact that nobody said Masks of Nyarlathotep or Nerds of a Podcast, that means you're all fired, including me.
I would have to listen to one of them first.
I thought it would be a little too
that's
over
fair.
The top to
can we can we all get rehired after this podcast?
Yeah, ask yeah. Johnny though. Your seniority resets.
Oh, no.
I'm in trouble. I'm out of the totem pole.
you have to quit and reapply first though.
Oh,
okay. First in, last out, right? All right, so let's go ahead and get into games. I'll start this time.
I just heard you talk. Jeez.
Oh. My favorite game by far is Sentinels of the Multiverse. I love superheroes, I love cards, I like co-op games. I do enjoy a good competitive game. This one does it really well. It's a lot of interplay, it runs itself, nobody has to be the bad guy. I'm all about not having to have a bad guy, like somebody else, like the game runs itself that way. I think it takes a lot of the great aspects of stuff like Arkham Horror or Elder Sign, and it makes it simple. In case of Arkham Horror, and then makes it superheroes in both cases. I really, really, really like it. And I think everybody here knows I'll play anytime. Like, quite literally, some people know that I will play in the middle of the night, and they will glare at me a
at
lot.
At 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so I really like Sentinel of the Multiverse. Let's go with Scott next.
Is that going to be a board game?
I hope not.
Game?
No. Go ahead.
It's a toss-up between Mass Effect, which probably comes in second, and Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed, especially Black Flag, the fourth one. I'm all about the piracy. Assassin's Creed was amazing. I got the collector's pre-order, threw it in the Xbox, fired it up. My wife did not have her glasses on and was standing in the kitchen and looked through the dining room and looked in and went, "Is that a live-action opening?" And I went, "No, sweetie, that's all CGI." And she went, "Whoa, those graphics are amazing." And I have vacationed down in the Caribbean, and it is one of the most amazing places I've ever visited. And you can go to all, I mean, it is just phenomenal. It's like being there again, and it's amazing.
I'm going to let you finish.
No,
now
I'm not.
I get to interrupt.
Go ahead.
I should have said Fallout. Both of the Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas are.
I'll be talking about Fallout.
Okay, good. Then I'm happy. As long as they get mentioned.
Then I'm happy.
Yeah.
So it's really like being there, and it is flawless entry. There's the ship aspect of it, where you're piloting the Jackdaw, which is your giant pirate ship, and then there's the caves and locales that you can visit on the different islands, and then there's the story, and you literally seamlessly move from game mode to game mode with no break in the action. Wow. It is really, really some of the best video game play that I have ever played. And when you're done with Assassin's Creed 2, which is, I haven't played the very first one. I hear bad things about the control system.
There's some iffy stuff, and then you get stuck in glitches.
And then, yeah, and things like that. So I had it suggested to me to start with Assassin's Creed 2 with Ezio, and that was amazing. And it just went forward from there. And 2, Revelations and Brotherhood bring the story of the person that you are outside of the Animus, the is just, you lay down and it's your genetic memory that you relive memories from your past generations. So that's why this person in the hoodie can wander around, get into this machine, and now you're back in Rome, or you're back in 1775, 1715 with piracy. You're back in, you know, these former lives, and you have to relive this to find, okay, well, the secret-y thing we need to find was buried somewhere, but we don't know where. So relive this life until you find out where it was so that we can take that secret and go to that island and dig it up today. Because it was lost in time. And it's really just phenomenal. Hours and hours and hours of play. And you should know, because I let you borrow Assassin's Creed 2 recently, and you've put in some time, from what I understand.
Yeah, yeah. I have quit playing. I just don't have time right now. But it's good.
Well, and it's one of those games, to speak to that point, it's one of those games that you can put down because you played 29 hours straight, and then you go 3-4 weeks, and you're like, okay, and you come back to it, and you pick up the controller, and you're like, oh, yeah, and you're right back in it.
Yeah. John.
Well, the game I finally decided on for my favorite game is a game I've never actually played.
All right.
Which might be cheating, but it's just the desire to play it is so immense right now. I want to play Fate, the RPG. Mm-hmm. It's an amazingly simple system that you can turn into whatever you want it to be. Somebody posted online or read somewhere that they wanted a Magic the Gathering type game, and they tried to use D&D and other fantasy games to recreate the feel of Magic the Gathering, and it didn't work. So I created my version of a Magic the Gathering role-playing game using the Fate system, which I'm personally pretty proud of and pretty excited about trying out someday. I don't know when that'll be, but maybe in June or after June.
Hopefully before June.
Have you guys played Fate before?
I have not.
Fate's really, really nice in that you pick one attribute or one skill, yeah, both, at +4. 2 at +3, 3 at +2, 4 at +1. And then 5 at 0. And the idea is, if you're in a contested role, whoever gets the highest plus, if you get, you know, you're going against me and I draw and I get an 8 and you get a 6, okay, you take your 6 away from my 8, I got a 2. So 0 is, well, we both punched at each other and punched our fists together and nobody really hit anybody. The +1 on my end versus +1 on your end, now we're talking degrees of success. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really interesting in that I can try to do something static against the environment where, okay, I did my draw or I did my roll, and you get either +1 on each die, 0 on each die, or -1 on each die, and then you add them up. And then you add your, you know, if it's my 4 skill, I start at 4. Then I die, roll, and modify it accordingly. But you can fail at something and then take a negative to succeed.
Yep.
You're like, I'm going to try to snatch that off of the train that's going by. I see somebody's got a bag that I want, so I'm going to reach out and I'm going to grab it. Well, I failed. But I can succeed if I take the aspect broken arm. Like, I reached out and grabbed it, but yoink! Okay, well, now for the rest of the scenario that I'm in, my right arm was broken.
And rather than having physical hit points and sanity and all these things to kind of balance, you just take a general, they call them consequences, and I forgot the other word.
Disadvantages.
There's two categories. One. Basically, you mark them off. Your choice every time. You mark off.
Oh, the three boxes at the bottom.
You mark off whatever you want to mark off up until the point where you've marked it all off. And that's when you're, that's when your character's out of the scene or out of the game, depending on the exact scenario going on. Because if you're on, you know, you're trying to disarm the bomb and you fail, you can say I die, or you can just say I, you know,
blown out a window.
Yeah, come out with a concussion. And so you can change the story to fit the scenario in a much better way. I won't say better, because I won't pass judgment on any other game, because everybody's game got their game. But for me, it's a better system than what 15 hit points mean. Okay, I'm level 15. Why does a die roll of a 10, why is that a failure? I'm this awesome of a character, you know. In D&D, you have those questions. Why is a 15 a failure in this scenario? In Fate, you have a +6, but it's still, or you know, a 0. Why is it a failure? Oh, because this happened. Those elements, what happened goes into the story, and everyone has to use that. Whereas the GM is just deciding things in D&D most of the time.
So. Right. Or you've got a character that takes 108 hit points of damage, and they've got 216 total, and they're like, and I've had this. I hop up and I go over and do this thing. You took 108 points of damage. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's just, do you realize what just happened to you? Well, but that's only half. Like, okay, that's one of the nice things, and I'm wrapping this up here in just a second. Another nice thing is one of the things that I saw put in is, okay, the five of us are sitting in the room when the ninja sneaks in. Make your perception roll. Okay, three of us failed. We're in a well-lit room, and a guy in full black thing climbed through a window. Describe to me why you failed. What were you looking? What were you doing that you missed it? Were you looking at your phone? Were you staring at the girl across the room? How did you fail this perception check? And it creates a better story that way.
Okay, cool.
Jesse, why don't you tell us your favorite game?
All right, I'm going to cheat. Don't worry, listeners. I'm going to cheat next week also. But
that's so much better.
Hurry up and cheat.
I'm going to the entire Fallout series.
Okay.
As a whole is just absolutely phenomenal. First game I can remember playing that had an actual storyline besides squishing turtles was Fallout.
What did you play where you squished turtles?
Mario
Brothers.
Those aren't turtles, those are Koopas.
And one of the things I remember, I was in my early teens, and for some reason I found it hilarious. As soon as you get out of this vault, the first thing the person offers you is an iguana on a stick to eat. That's their food source. It's just absolutely hilarious. I ate every one of them I could cross. And then, like, the third mission you go into a doctor's office. There's a note stating he needs to go meet with the iguana merchant. And I thought, that's kind of weird. And you go down below, and you find out that
iguanas... I ate every one of them I could. I just got that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Iguanas, there are no iguanas in the region. It's the people that the doctor's hacking up and putting on the stick. And
that's awesome.
That was my introduction to the series.
That's amazing.
And suddenly you didn't feel so good about eating as many iguanas on a stick as you could, huh?
Exactly.
How did you feel about the transition between top-down to first-person?
I was very resistant, and I wish I wasn't.
See, if Fallout 3 would have been top-down, it would have been much better, I think.
I enjoyed it for what it was. I wish I got the collector's edition. I didn't because I hate first-person shooters with a passion. I have no skill at them. I can't hit the broadside of a barn.
But especially the game doesn't require that.
Exactly. See, that's what saves me. You can still play the game based on percentages, and it worked.
You can be absolutely the worst first-person shooter ever in the game.
Yeah.
And still play this game.
But if you're a Halo player, you're not.
Yeah. And every Fallout game has left me with memories. Fallout 3... there's a town called Old Onley that is full of these big giant monsters called Deathclaws. And apparently there's this sewer system that's exposed. And I seen one, panicked, backed up, fell into it. I had like 12 shotgun shells left and was almost out of ammunition. And there's no way out of it. Well, apparently you can fast travel if there's no monsters around. But there was a monster around somewhere. So I walk in the door... And there was one of these giant death claws. So I walked back out, tried fast travel, and there was still a monster around. So I had to fight my way through an entire sewer full of these things. And I think I fired my last round of rifle shells into the last one before I opened the door and got out.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a rough game. I mean, it's a really good game, but it's post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
It is actually post-apocalyptic. Yeah, I've just been saying it.
I've played one Fallout, and I have, again, I've played it for like 20 minutes at most, and I still have vivid memories. Yeah. It was done in a Baldur's Gate third-person view. I sat down at the, I want to say, PlayStation or Xbox, and my buddy was like, you want to pick this guy because he's got the best guns starting out, blah, blah, blah. And I knew I was only going to play for 20 minutes or so. So I was like, no, I want to be the pseudo-zombie guy with the metal jaw that's been replaced who doesn't get guns. And he's like, you're going to die. It's like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to punch everything. And I was just running around punching things with my brass knuckles. It was amazing.
That would have been tactics.
There you go. I never knew what it was called. I just knew Fallout was in the name.
Yeah. Fallout New Vegas, I have put... Steam keeps track of your hours played. I put like 320 hours into that game. And that's the longest I've played any single game.
When I played through Fallout New Vegas with all of its DLC, I put in 127 hours. And that was after I went, you know what? I'm done doing side quests. Let's just go ahead and get through the story. Because I haven't finished this one. And there are so many
side quests. So good on... development. So the clear bad guys from the start in Fallout New Vegas is the Legion. But if you start playing Legion, you start listening to them, they have a good reason for what they're doing. Yeah. They feel they're doing the right thing, and they're doing it the right way. The only way they can do it in that world.
Nice.
But those are the best villains.
It is. Yeah,
so absolutely.
They're trying to do good from their viewpoint.
Those yeah.
Amendment. Best game of all time, Final Fantasy VII, if we're talking about hours. I took the week off work and put 90 hours in on disc one in the first week.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that is a good game.
Yeah. Moving on. Terrible game. We talked about you brought up hours spent.
Yeah.
Sure. Would you like to go ahead and go?
Do we have any time left?
Yes, we do. Go on.
Okay, because I was wondering.
I know, it's as though Scott wouldn't quit talking.
No, no, it wow. was that. It wasn't as if.
I go think ahead. Games for me, I was brought up on Risk. That's what we played every holiday. So, if I have a go-to game, that would be it. But since I met you 5 years ago, you've introduced me to so many games mm-hmm. that if I had a game to pick to play on a deserted island for the rest of my life, it would probably be Lords of Waterdeep.
Ooh, good game.
With the expansions, right?
Maybe not that expansion. No. That expansion is crazy.
Which expansion?
The Undermountain and Skullport.
So both expansions.
Do we have Undermountain?
They're both in that box. They're two separate expansions.
Oh, because the only one I remember playing with is Skullport.
Every time we play with both.
Okay, Skullport is crazy.
So with Risk, are you a South America, Australia, or Asia player?
I am Asia.
Oh, I'm a Europe player.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Why? I mean,
two reasons. You both have notice that you both went, what? No one ever goes for Europe.
Because
so it gets left to itself. It's worth five. It's easier to hold than North America because for some reason Americans have a thing about taking North America from you. So you just sit in Europe and then you take Africa, you hit South America, and you've won by then.
Maybe.
I'm an Australian player myself. Right. I want to hole up and you're not getting to me.
See, I like South America.
I play the people at the table. I don't play.
Johnny's like, whatever.
No, that's fair. I play the people at the table. I know Matt's a Europe player, so I take Eastern Asia or Western Asia.
So
that's where I hole up because then I can spread out.
Spread out.
So
exactly how I play.
A couple of years ago at Thanksgiving, Shirley says, let's play some, Risk.
And let me just tell you, and her two sons and me. Caveat to this. We had not been dating very long at that time, or hadn't been like competitively gaming. I'm an Edgewiki, and competition is in our blood.
You got the Edgewiki blood.
So my sons are like, we're gonna take this guy.
No. So Christopher's like, okay, we can play, and I was like, we're gonna play hardcore. And I'm like, what?
I mean, like, get in your face.
Hardcore? Yeah, we're playing hardcore. Are you sure you want to play hardcore? Yeah!
And
okay, guys.
Pretty hardcore.
5 turns later, game was over, I won.
Yeah, 30 minutes.
Nice.
I've never played such a short risk game.
I literally have turn pictures, or I had turn pictures from
it's
that.
It's ridiculous.
It went,
Matt wiped the
thing is, they got into the classic mistake of a
never,
land war.
Never started
in Asia.
A land war in Asia.
And the three of them were just fighting there, and I went, Europe is mine. Africa is mine. South America is mine. I'm just going to wipe you guys.
Yeah.
Nice. It was ridiculous. And, like, the thing is, that's one of the first three interactions my oldest son had with Matt. He hasn't hardly ever come around after that.
That's not my fault. You cannot blame it on I came home one time.
What?
From being out, and her family was over, and literally her dad and brother are pacing on each side of the table with the Risk board between them. Just pacing back and forth. Just pacing back and forth. It was so intense. It was the worst, most intense feeling ever.
And that's what Risk is like in my family.
All right, well, that'll do us tonight for the Nerds of Main podcast. Check back next week where we will talk about apps, movies, and TV. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can go over to Patreon and support us there. Sign up for our newsletter on our website, and you can find us over at /loop. Talk to you guys real soon.
This has been a production of the Omega Nerds Network, the network where it's on.